chance their job. And it makes a man watchful. And a little lonely.
Come on in for an evening of poems and stories about the American West. A land of legend, of romance, of friendship and courage. A motherlode of remembrance. A true showcase of the Old West with the old cowboy, J.C. Halsey.
Howdy, folks. I'm the old cowboy. Welcome. Come on in. It's that time again. It's time for the Wild West Showdown. Grab a cup of Joe and settle in for some good old-fashioned cowboy fun. As usual, before we start and get serious, well, what am I talking about? This is serious, at least to me. I got a couple of things I need to get off my chest, so here goes. We've lived here in this house for over 35 years, and our house has always been a place where stray cats come to the back porch to eat. There have been many that just passed through, but there have been some that became part of the Halsey household. Recently, a beautiful tiger-colored tomcat kept coming around, sometimes staying for days. My wife and I figured if he was going to stay around, he needed that dreaded trip to the vet. It was extremely hard to get him into the carrier for the trip. I still got scars after that experience. However, we did get him in it and carried him to the vet, at the tune of $160 and some change. When we brought him home, we kept him inside so he wouldn't wander off. He became so loud that he was eventually left outside. He didn't return for a few days. Well, I don't think he liked especially me very much. However, he did return and stayed outside for a few more days. The length of time he was gone got to be longer and longer. Today he returned with a red collar around his neck. Now here's my question. Should I try to see who put the red collar on him and ask to be reimbursed for the vet bill? On a sadder note, one of the cats that decided to live with us and became the one to sleep with her little paws in my hand every night disappeared in October 2016. I hate to think of what might have happened to her. You see, my neighbor has a junky backyard, tall grass, junk, filled with all sorts of varmints, and one that's extremely dangerous, a bobcat. I've called the city and complained, but to no avail. I just hope that no other cats disappear. Now that I've done that, let's get on with the show. Let's have a song right now. This is Mo Pitney with his newest song, Everywhere.
I open up my eyes and feel you by my side, for the morning light even hits me. There's comfort in the knowing that anywhere I'm going, I know you'll be rolling with me. Everywhere, every step, every sunrise, every sunset, every word I say, every night and day, every single move, everything I do. Life on my left and on my right, even when I cast an eye in my rear view, I feel you ever close in the whisper of the road. As this journey unfolds, I see you everywhere, every step, every sunrise, every sunset, every word I say, every night. Every single move, everything I do, everywhere, everywhere, everywhere. In the sunshine, when the rain pours, in this heart of mine, I know you're everywhere. Every sunrise, every sunset, everything I see, every ounce of me, every breath of air, each and every prayer. Everywhere, everywhere, everywhere.
You know, I believe that young man has just a tad bit of talent. I, for one, am glad the election's over, what with all the protesters and everything. You know, a lot of folks fuss about protesters, and I reckon I'm one of those fussing. But if we'll take a look at history, this ain't nothing new. What if the women of the past hadn't protested about not being able to vote? Where would we be as a country today? I will also have to say that the protesters of the past weren't quite the same as they are today. However, because of the women of the past standing up for their rights, on December the 10th, 1869, Wyoming was the first state that granted women the right to vote. Motivated more by interest in free publicity than a commitment to gender equality, Wyoming territorial legislators passed a bill that was signed into law granting women the right to vote. Western states led the nation in approving women's suffrage, but some of them had rather unsavory motives. Though some men recognized the important role women played in frontier settlement, others voted for women's suffrage only to bolster the strength of conservative voting blocs. In Wyoming, some men were also motivated by sheer loneliness. In 1869, the territory had over 6,000 adult males and only 1,000 females. And these men hoped women would be more likely to settle in the rugged and isolated country if they were granted the right to vote. Some of the leaders did have more respectable reasons for supporting women's right to vote. William Bright, a territorial legislator who was in his mid-40s, had a persuasive young wife who convinced him that denying women the vote was a gross injustice. The other major backer, Edward M. Lee, the territorial secretary who had championed the cause for years, argued that it was unfair for his mother to be denied this privilege using the excuse that it was already granted to African-American males. Ultimately, though, appeals to justice and equality did pass the legislation. Most Wyoming legislators supported Bright and Lee's bill because they thought it would win the territory free national publicity and might attract more single, marriageable women to the region. Territorial Governor John A. Campbell appreciated the publicity power of the policy and signed the bill into law, making Wyoming the first territory or state in the history of the nation to grant women this fundamental right of citizenship. How about Chad Prather's thought for the day?
People ask me why I always do these videos from the truck. Quite simply, it's because I'm always going somewhere. Like right now, I'm headed to the Home Depot to get a sheetrock repair kit because at 4 a.m. this morning, the smoke alarm in my bedroom unnecessarily and unexpectedly decided to go off. I mean, it went off. It went off. I don't mean that little beep that happens every 40 seconds to tell you that the battery's down and now you got to search all over the house to see which one it is. I mean, it went wake the dead. Sit straight up in the bed. The dog is cowering over a puddle of pee. You're thinking, this is it. This is it. Jesus has come back and Jade ain't ready to go. But she was ready. She was ready. She was standing beside the bed with a 12-gauge sawed-off pump and she'd already chambered a shell. I was like, easy, Sarah Connor. This ain't Terminator 8. What are you going to do? Shoot the fire? But she was ready. So I had to wade into the thing all zombie style, half asleep, ripped it off the ceiling. I'm headed to Home Depot to get a sheetrock repair kit. Somebody call Bob Vila. I need Ty Pennington. Call Martha Stewart. No, I tell you who you need to call. Call Dateline. Call Dateline. You heard it here first because this one in here, this girl, I'm going to wander into this house unexpectedly one night. She's going to blow me half in two. Y'all pray for me. You know she's got motive. Pray for me. But call Dateline. I love y'all. God bless. Facebook poker.
You know me being a Texan and being mighty proud of it, sometimes I don't realize that there are folks all around the world that love country music as much as I do. This young lady's from Newquay, Cornwall on the southern coast of England. This is Daisy Clark with her original song, Crazy.
Choose your words so carefully. I liked it when you first looked to me, and we talked all night watching movies. I like the sound of your voice in the morning. Oh, when something's wrong, doesn't seem so daunting. I like your face while you're playing your guitar. Every little trouble just seems so far. I'm crazy, so are you. Didn't believe my say how much I need you. What would I do without? I like when we drive around town and my singing is the only sound. I hate it when you tell me how to drive, but I love you so I guess it's alright. I love you too when I shirts and your bad jeans, and when I sing
want to welcome to the Wild West Showdown today, Arthur Johnny Gunn. Welcome, Mr. Gunn.
Thank you, JC. It's a pleasure to be here.
With a name like Gunn, you was just almost forced to be an Arthur, weren't you?
I actually got my start in radio back in the 50s, and that's when fancy names really meant something.
Tell us a little bit about your radio experience. What did you do in radio?
Well, I started out as a disc jockey and learned really quick that that's not going to work. And I got into news and stayed in journalism for the rest of my career in print, newspapers, magazines, and, of course, radio. I loved it.
I read in your bio where you bought or you purchased a newspaper. Tell us about that.
I bought the newspaper in Virginia City, Nevada, and that's just about the most exciting place I think I've ever lived. I loved it up there. I sat at the same desk that Mark Twain sat at, and I used a lot of the equipment that he used. It was just exciting. It was a weekly newspaper. You know, you're never going to get rich. You're never going to go to Bahamas on the weekend, but it's an awful lot of fun, and I loved it.
So how long did that last?
Until I went broke.
Well, that could have been in a week, or it could have been lasted for 10 years.
I actually made 3.5 years.
Well, that's a pretty good run. You enjoyed it, though, didn't you?
Oh, I did enjoy it. And Virginia City is a wonderful place to live and a wonderful place to visit.
Tell me where you were born, where you grew up, and where you're living now.
Well, I was born in Santa Cruz, California, and that's right on the north end of Monterey Bay. Beautiful country. The redwoods come right down to the seashore. And I lived there till I was 14. And then we moved to Guam, and I went to high school on Guam. I lived out there for 4 years.
What'd you think about Guam?
That is a beautiful island. It's 32 miles long and 8 miles wide at the widest point. And it's a delightful place to live. I'm a fisherman. I've been a fisherman since the day I learned how to spell fish. Out there, it's a fisherman's paradise. I went fishing and skin diving almost every day for 4 years.
I spent some time in Guam, and I didn't particularly like it.
Yeah, but you were in the military. I was a teenage boy.
Well, I was a teenage boy, too, but I guess it was a little different. Our drinking water was water that ran off the runway. and the barracks smelled like mildew all the time. No, I didn't like it a whole lot.
Yeah, I was there from 52 to 56. To me, it was a wonderful time.
Okay, where are you living at now?
I'm in Reno, actually about 20 miles north of Reno. My wife and I have a small little hobby farm out here. It's considerably different from the tropics. Northern Nevada winters can get a little bit fierce. We've been fighting blizzards and storms for the last 10 days now. In fact, it's snowing outside right now.
You mentioned a wife. How long you been married, and do you have any kids?
Between us, we have five, and we've been married for 8 years. It's a wonderful, wonderful time. She's a Southern California girl, and I'm teaching her all about Northern Nevada.
Yeah, that'd be a tough lesson, all right.
You cannot compare Northern Nevada to Orange County, no matter what you do.
How does your family and friends feel about you being an author?
Well, being in journalism most of my life, the concept of me writing something isn't the least bit out of line to them. They've lived with me writing. It's like somebody said, gee, it must be really exciting to see your name in print. After 55 or 60 years, it's not that exciting anymore. It's wonderful. I love it. But the excitement end of it isn't really there anymore.
Okay, you mentioned that you've basically been writing all your life. Journalism and other things like that. When did you have your first book published?
Well, this is interesting because I always wrote news, basically nonfiction. So I never had a book or anything published. And I started writing short stories, and that changed my whole life right there. My first book came out 2009, and it was a collection of short stories. Nobody seems to remember it, but it got me started. It turned on the light bulb, so to speak.
You said seeing your name in print was old news. How did you feel when you held that first book with your name as the author?
Yeah, that's a whole different aspect there. When you hold a book and you're looking at it, you know, and you see the title and you see your name, that is pretty exciting. That it still is. After 10 books, it's still very exciting.
You mentioned you're writing Westerns now. What genre have you been writing?
Crime, mystery, thrillers. That I can turn my journalism keys on because I can go back into my own stories and talking to the cops for all those years, talking to fire departments all those years. I can relate on the crime mystery stories. I have a lot of fun writing them.
If you had to make a choice, a hard choice, between the two genres that you write, which one do you think you might choose?
That's not fair, JC. Okay, the crime mystery stories are going to sell more than the Western stories. But I really like writing the Westerns. I would stick with the Westerns if I had to make an absolute decision.
Well, let me ask you another hard question.
Okay.
You say crime sells good. What if you didn't sell even one copy? Well, maybe a couple of copies. That's all you sold. Would you quit writing?
Could you quit?
No, I couldn't.
No, I couldn't quit. No. I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I go out and feed my horses. I come in and light the fire and pour my coffee, turn on the computer, and I start writing. And I've been doing that for so many years, I couldn't quit.
How many books have you published?
I've got them right in front of me. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
12 books. How many years?
Six.
Okay, you've got your list there in front of you. Out of all of those books that you've written, do you have a favorite one?
You know, I do. And it's a short story book. It's a standalone short story ebook. It's not available in print, only as an ebook. I wrote it this year for a Christmas or holiday anthology. And it's called Slick's Special Christmas. It's a bunch of cowboys up in Montana in the middle of winter, and two of their range riders have not come in. And it's the middle of a blizzard, and it's 2 days from Christmas, and they have to go find them. And they do, and I'm not going past that.
Oh, you don't need to give any more away.
No.
All right, explain this to the folks. What's the difference between writing a Western and writing a crime novel? Let me go ahead and finish up that question. How do you keep them separated in your head?
Sometimes I don't, but the story, you have to have a reason for the writing. And so the story and the characters have to relate to each other. And so if I've got a guy out in the middle of the desert looking for a bad guy, it doesn't matter whether he's in a police car or whether he's on the back of a horse. Does that make sense?
That's exactly what I tell folks when they tell me, well, it's not a Western, it's a police story. I tell them, if you put a cowboy hat on that policeman, it's a Western.
That's pretty darn close. That is pretty darn close.
You told us about the process you go through to write. You get up at 4 o'clock and you go feed the horses. You didn't mention gathering the eggs, though.
I do gather the eggs.
Then you come back inside, sit down in front of your computer. What inspires you to start writing?
I was reading short stories and unhappy with a lot of what I was reading. And I said, I wonder if I could do that. I was still working. I was editor of an online news magazine. And I sat down and I thought, well, I can write a short story. I'd never written a short story in my life. And I wrote one and sent it to 5 or 6 different magazines and got 5 or 6 different notes saying that they would rather not publish my work. And after about the 10th attempt, I got one published. So then I got 3 or 4 more published, and then I got 5 or 6 more published, and then I said, I'm going to write a novel. I had 2 or 3 novels that went absolutely nowhere and couldn't even get anywhere past the quarry. And then all at once, I apparently learned how to do something right. Now I'm able to get books published. I love it.
What do you think about the way the publishing world has changed, that we're able to publish even if we have to publish ourselves?
There's an awful lot of arguments going both ways on that. I'm wondering whether Amazon.com doesn't have a stranglehold on the independents the same way the so-called traditional publishers have a stranglehold on the writers. I'm not sure it's the best that could be, but I think it's very good for what's available.
Amazon does own the biggest chunk of the book business right now.
They pretty much write the rules. You know, the old story, the guy with the gold makes the rules.
Yes, that's true. Listen, as a kid, did you go to the Saturday matinee very much?
I never missed a Saturday morning matinee. No. Hopalong Cassidy and Roy Rogers and... Oh, boy. Yeah, yeah. Until I moved to Guam, then we didn't have them.
We don't have those silver screen heroes like we used to have anymore.
It's a real shame because people don't recognize the morality that came along with those stories. They all had deep moral backgrounds.
Yeah, they sure did. Did you have a favorite movie star back then?
No, I can't really say I did. Hopalong Cassidy has to stand out in my mind. I don't know why. But I also love the Cisco Kid.
Do you remember how much popcorn cost?
My wife and I were talking about that the other night because somebody said something on one of the TV shows. And I can remember going to the movie on Saturday morning with a quarter, getting in, getting a candy bar or a box of popcorn and a soda pop, and still coming home with a nickel.
And staying all day, right?
Yeah. Used to have the cereal and then the cartoon and then the news and then the main feature.
Stirs up them memories, don't it, Johnny?
There's a lot of them.
What was your favorite treat as a kid, like candy, cake, something like that?
I love Milk Duds.
Got them at the theater, didn't you?
Yeah, sure did. I had my red wagon, my flyer wagon, and I could collect Coke bottles for 2 cents. And it didn't take that many Coke bottles to get me into the theater on Saturday morning.
That's another lost art, isn't it? Collecting Coke bottles and turning them in for money.
Yeah, they all had a value to them. We got 2 cents for a Coke bottle. I remember that.
Do you have any advice for somebody that might want to be an author?
Yeah, I do. And it's the same thing that I've heard 1,000 times, and I'll repeat it, and I'm sure it'll be repeated back to me. Just do it. Just sit down and write. Just read everything you can get your hands on and write. Let it all hang out.
Do you use an outline when you write, or do you just let it flow?
I try to have a general idea of where I think it should go. And then my characters get a hold of it and they take it where they want to go.
Ain't that fun?
Because sometimes you have to take them aside and pump them a time or two and get them back in line.
Are you writing anything new right now?
I'm putting together a set of stories, and they're from the frontier era.
How long does it usually take you to write a book, say a 300-page book?
I don't know. I've got two or three in the staging process. I would say it's, for me anyway, it's probably a good 7 or 8 months.
If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
I'm on Facebook, of course, or I guess it's okay to give you my email address, isn't it?
If you want to share it with the folks, sure.
Sure, I have no problem with that. It's Johnny-Gunn, and that's, of course, G-U-N-N, @att.net.
If somebody wanted to buy some of your books, I guess Amazon would be the best place to do that. Is that correct?
Yeah, Amazon is the best place to do it. And I do have an Amazon.com author page.
Johnny, we've enjoyed so much having you as a guest on the Wild West Showdown today. And I want to give you a personal invitation from one old cowboy to another to come back and visit anytime.
JC, thank you very much. I look forward to coming back. You're a grand person, and I love your writing, too. So just being able to talk about the publishing business is quite a good deal.
We'll talk to you later then, okay?
Thank you.
Now let's listen to another talented young lady. This is Sandra Humphreys with River of Tears.
I'm tossing and turning, Lord, I think that I'm coming apart. I cry your name in the darkness as I feel the tears burning. It's hard to sleep on a broken heart. You tell me floating on courage and pride. I thought we would last, but now I'm sinking fast in this river of tears that I've I stare out the window and wonder where did you go? And I count the long hours till dawn. If I cry me a river, it's because I don't know. I've drifted while I'm heading. Tell me we've been treading water, floating on courage and pride. I thought we would last, but now I'm sinking fast in this river of tears that I've of tears that I cry.
What's going on in the book world? We've got publishers closing their doors completely, or at least closing some of their imprints. I can understand why the Vanity Press folks are closing their doors, which I personally think it's about time for those kind of thieves. I think they're closing their doors because many authors have learned they don't need to spend their hard-earned dollars to publish a book. I said I understand about Vanity Press, but why are the large, legitimate houses closing many of their imprints? Again, I think it's because authors are wising up and realizing they don't have to sign away their rights and receive little or no royalties. This new world of technology that we've moved into has opened up lots of possibilities for new and published authors alike. It's become so easy for anybody to self-publish a book. However, in being so easy, it's also flooded the market with badly formatted and badly edited books. If you, as an author, plan to ride this horse alone, realize this. If you want a polished book that you'll be proud of, if you want a book that folks will buy and tell their friends about, you can't ride the trail alone. You'll need help. You're going to need to hire a professional editor and a cover designer. This is the trouble with being self-published. It's kind of a catch-22. You can wind up spending as much money getting your book up to standard as you would have with one of those vanity press crooks. So what's an author to do? It sounds like an impossible situation, but it's not really. I recommend, before you jump at the first opportunity that's offered to you, back off and do a little bit of research. Well, I know how you feel. You've finally finished your story. You've suffered and you've bled to get it finished, and you won't know you need to get it published. I know that feeling very well. But again, don't jump like the little frog jumping from lily pad to lily pad. If you jump too fast, you might wind up in water over your head. There are some publishers out there that want to help you and not take your money. One of those publishers is Outlaws Publishing, LLC. Outlaws is a fairly new company that has one goal in mind. That's to help you, the author, get the recognition that you've always dreamed about. I have to be honest, though. Your book might not become a bestseller, but you won't have to fork over dollar after dollar that you'll never recoup. You will be part of a family of authors that care about one another, a family of authors that'll help you if you ask for it. So I reckon the bottom line to all of this is check us out on the internet, www.outlawspublishing.com. We're also on Facebook, or you can send an email, info@outlawspublishing.com. info@outlawspublishing.com. Now I think it's time for some good old cowboy wisdom. When a cowboy gets too old to set a bad example, he hands out good advice. This is the old cowboy saying adios and happy trails.
Come on back next week to the Wild West Showdown with the old cowboy J.C. Holsey.